KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored by Allen's Tree Service. Now, here's your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, Mr. Kelly, before you take off, did I catch you playing with the rubber ducky while you were out there in the newsroom?
I did, yeah, I had my rubber ducky. It is rubber ducky day.
Yes.
So, yes, I had a, you know, you gave him to me, and I wanted to make sure he didn't feel left alone on rubber ducky day.
Right, especially in the newsroom.
Yeah. Well, you got to play in the newsroom a little bit.
Absolutely.
Keep him warm in there. It's kind of chilly.
So you have a bowl of warm water you can float around?
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you're such a nice person.
I try to be.
I know you feed the birds, too.
I do.
Wild birds.
Man, I bought some. I spend more money feeding the birds, I think, than I do feeding me. Yeah.
Well, that's good, because buying good quality seed is by far the best thing to do, because if you buy the cheaper seed, there's just a lot of infill filler stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The birds go, nope, they just rake it out.
I just get, you know, the cardinals, and that is sunflower. That's all I get, sunflower.
Which sunflower do you use, the black one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the thistle, I mean, those little boogers are going crazy. I've got three tubes, and they get emptied every day.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So they like it.
Do you have a video camera on it?
You know, I'd like to. I really would. That's a good idea. I think I'll do that.
Yeah.
We'll live stream it and then charge you to watch it.
Well, I'm rich from doing this show, so.
Yeah, so spread the wealth.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
All right, thanks.
You bet.
And folks, welcome to the second hour of the Garden Hotline. We'll be giving the tip of the trowel shortly, but right now, call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. And thanks for having me on your show. You can give a call. We can talk about plant selection, caring for, ups and downs, and all arounds related to your annuals. How about those geraniums? There's been several calls this past month or so where people brought their geraniums back inside. My grandmother used to do that, but she just put them in the basement and kind of just let them wilt. And the stems would be fine, then she'd stick them back outside. But there's been several people that said theirs are still blooming inside. How about the edibles, your ground covers, your house plants, like the gentleman? Sorry about those hibiscus. They look great outside, but it's almost one of those plants. It's kind of like the mandevilla vine. That, yeah, they look perfect outside in the weather and everything else, but when you bring them inside, they don't like it so much. How about your lawn, your perennials, your roses, trees, shrubs, vines, and water gardens? And always remember, my answers, comments, and opinions is certainly not the only garden path to take, but strictly offered for you to consider. Greg is producing, so he's just, he took a couple phone calls, but there's still some phone lines open. And, during the week, I do landscape consulting, where I can come to your home and we can discuss what's going on in the outdoors, in your yard, whether it's an aesthetic thing, problem solving, have a list of questions. We'll go through those. And also, I'll keep my eyes, ears, and whatever open to find out maybe there's something else that's impacting your landscape that you didn't even think about. So, tip of the trowel is a special recognition for individual, group, or situation that's made an impression on me, and it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Today's tip of the trowel goes out to various garden clubs. The O'Fallon Garden Club, that's O'Fallon, Missouri Garden Club. They meet on the fourth Tuesday of each month, and guess what? Some of the things that O'Fallon, Missouri Garden Club supports: there's a Bluebird Sanctuary, there's United Service Therapeutic Garden, and the Twin Chimneys Elementary School Butterfly Garden. So that's the kind of thing. So it's just not you go and you hang out and you just sit around in the, let's say, a room, and somebody gets up and shows you a PowerPoint of the plants or anything else. So this shows you what these garden clubs do. So also Webster Groves Garden Club, which used to be the Men's Garden Club of Webster Groves. It meets on the second Monday. And, you can confirm, just get a call, in contact with them to find out where the exact location is. There's a West County Daylily Club and also the Missouri Botanical Garden Daylily Society. And then if you're into wildflowers, the Wild Ones, Natural Landscapers, assist in efforts to establish native plant communities around homes, schools, and businesses through tours and mentoring and everything else. So all kinds of different garden clubs and garden organizations that you could be part of. So guess what? Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. We will be back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, questions, concerns, comments about your outdoors or your houseplants, of course, 314 436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Heard me talking about fungus in the previous hour? Well, those two winter funguses, yes. But I will tell you one thing that we think that we're doing that may be of benefit to our lawn is, guess what? Fertilizing. Fertilizing with the first number is nitrogen. Once that first number gets above 15%, that's those numbers equal percentage in that particular bag or that type of fertilizer. Above 15, that really kind of encourages fungus growth. So we think we're helping our lawn by using triple 20 or 25-5-5 or something along that line. Keep that first number lower than 15. And it's not to say it's going to always cause fungus, but it just sets up a scenario for the grass plants to be more prone to fungus problems, especially with fall feedings and coming in, you know, where the humidity is high like it was the other day. Fall fungus, yes. Winter fungus, yes. Oh, gosh. Fungus. You know, I've had allergy problems my entire life, and it's due to related to molds and fungus and things like that. So enough of that stuff. Mike Miller, yes, that's me. Terry lives in O'Fallon, Missouri. Terry, how are you today?
Hey, I'm good, Mike. How are you? Thanks for your service.
Well, thank you.
Listen, kind of a two-pronged question about my Norwegian spruce, which I use as a barrier that abuts a wooded area. Number one, typically I use these evergreen fertilizer spikes in the fall and in the spring, and these bushes have done extremely well. I didn't get to do it because of the drought last fall. And so I'm wondering, the first question would be, should I do that, you know, if we get some snow or if the soil gets moist enough so that I can drive these pegs, you know, circumferentially around the base of the bushes? And number two is, I have deer in the neighborhood, you know, when they rut.
Sure.
They love to get that velvet off their antlers, and so they hit the bushes and they hit the branches. I've tried mothballs and deer repellent and ad nauseum, you know, everything. And do you have any magic, any profound comments on that?
No, basically, if you've got, you know, if you're backing up to a wooded area and it's, you know, it does have deer as inhabitants, there's not really too much you can do. Combination of different things. You might try some Irish spring soap if you haven't tried that. But always, you know, whatever you do, just, you know, continuously change, because they can get more or less, let's say, resistant to whatever you're trying to use. So the Irish spring soap may be something to give it a try. You hang it from the branches. Don't lay it on the ground and see what will happen. And then now your Norway spruce, are we talking about trees or are we talking about shrubs?
Oh, we're talking about shrubs. Norwegian. They look like Christmas trees.
Okay, so how tall are they?
They range, I guess the spectrum would be maybe on the low side 6 and the high side 12 to 15 feet high. They're probably 2 to 4 years old.
Oh, so they're still relatively young. You know how big they're going to get, right? They're going to get huge. When they're young, they're really tight branched, and then as they age, their branches start, you know, getting more space in between them, and then the needles will start sagging down, which is not a problem with them. But yeah, fertilizing, if you've been happy with it, I normally don't recommend, you know, tree spikes or stakes or whatever, but if you've had good luck with it, certainly as soon as the ground, you know, is, you know, thawed enough, if you want to go ahead and head out there and do it. I don't like to necessarily prune going into wintertime. I mean, fertilize going into wintertime, simply because if it's an extended time before the actual winter gets here, some of the fertilizer could dissolve from these spikes and could cause some bud movement, you know, opening or things like that could be damaging. But, you could just pretty much from this point forward just do it anytime you can get out there.
So, if it thaws enough in the next 2 to 3 weeks, even though we're, quote, in the dead of winter, I won't do anything deleterious to the bushes.
No, basically because what happens is that stuff is so compacted, it has to dissolve, it has to melt, and then it has to migrate, you know, out to be able to be absorbed by the root system, the feeder roots of your trees.
Okay. Good. Excellent. All right, Mike. Well, listen, stay warm, buddy.
You too. Now let's go from O'Fallon, Missouri to Creve Coeur, and that's where Barbara lives. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about an azalea. My husband brought it home from the grocery store for me last Easter, and it you know, was pretty, and I thought, well, I'll just stick it out on the patio, and it about tripled in size.
Mm-hmm.
So I put it in a pot, and I was debating on whether I should just let it freeze or try to do something with it, and it started blooming in October, and it bloomed all the way until around Thanksgiving, and I had brought it in the house, because I thought, well, I might as well enjoy the blooms. Then it was time to put up the Christmas tree, so I thought, well, I got to put it in the basement because it was in the way. So now what I'm wondering is I put it in the basement, it's kind of dropping leaves, and I've been trying not to water it too much, but it's not happy down there. If I put it, should I bring it back upstairs? Should I put it on an unheated porch? Should I just try to keep it by a window in the basement and nurse it along? What should I do with it? Because I'd like to put it back on the patio next spring.
Sure. Basement's too depressing. Azaleas would be crying. So
yeah, it's not, I mean, it's by a window, but it's not getting much light.
Right, exactly. So this time of year, anything needs to have the maximum amount of light on the inside. I would say your porch doesn't probably get below freezing, I wouldn't think, even though it's unheated.
It has the last couple weeks. It has gotten in the high 20s on
right.
the porch, yeah.
But if it's not sitting on the floor, then you should be fine. I would take it out and just put it back in the window and just make sure that you don't let the soil get too dehydrated, too dry. So don't overwater it, of course, but don't underwater it. So water it as you put it out there, and just that's what I would do. And this might be a variety that's not hardy. So, I mean, there are some varieties that just can't grow here regardless. And they used to sell some of them, but fortunately the garden centers have gotten past the point of doing that. So this may be one that you never be able to grow outside, but it sounds like you've done a great job with it.
Well, now when you say put it back by the window, are you saying put it back inside the heated part of the house or put it out on the porch and just cross my fingers?
I would say put it out on the porch, personally.
And let it get cold. So now if I do that, will it lose all its leaves?
No, unless it's a deciduous type, because there are deciduous types of azaleas. So in other words, ones that drop all their leaves in the wintertime, or it sounds like the one that you have is probably an evergreen one. And the leaves that it dropped, that's a natural occurrence with any kind of broadleaf evergreen. The fact that it starts, as long as the leaves that it's dropping are interior leaves, the ones towards the center of the plant, not the ones on the ends of the branches.
Okay. And so is this a common thing to have ones that bloom twice a year? Like it bloomed was blooming at Easter, and then it just was pretty and green all summer, and then it bloomed again in fall like crazy.
Yeah, that sort of indicates to me that it's not a hardy variety necessarily. It's more or less one that can grow in Southern California or Florida or wherever like that. And you can't grow it outside here.
Okay, and so maybe just water it, every 2 weeks a little bit? Or
I would say look at the inside of the pot, and when you start to see the potting mix shrink away from the inside of the pot and there's a little gap, water it then, and then don't water it again until that happens.
And give it a good soaking water.
Exactly,
where it runs all
right.
the way through.
Right.
Okay, I'll try it on the porch. I
all
hope
right.
it makes it. Thanks, Mike.
Right, and if it dies, don't come after me, please. Anyway. Thanks, Barbara. And now let's go to Webster Groves, and that's where John lives. Hi, John.
Hi. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
So I have a question. I think you mentioned that you put some winterberry next to your house, and that reminded me of winter creeper, which I have a big problem with. And I assume you didn't mean winter creeper, which is the vine that is... I live near Blackburn Park, and that's... The Park Service has been trying to rid that...
Right.
Bird sanctuary of winter creeper, and I have it in my yard too, and it's been, I can keep it from taking over the whole piece of property, but I can't get rid of it, so I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Basically, it is winter creeper that I have between my garage and the alley, and what I do is just go out there and, dig up part of it and throw it into the yard waste dumpster. So I just, I wanted to have some evergreen besides the boxwood in that space. And this actually is quite, a quick story. Somebody in the neighborhood had it someplace. I'm not exactly sure where, but there was like two pieces of it about 6 inches long. And this was a couple years ago. And I just, and the pieces were laying in the alley. And I thought, well, I'll just knock the lower leaves off of it. And so the bottom two or three leaves, and then I just stuck it in this bed. And it actually took off. You know, that shows you how aggressive and why people don't necessarily like this. And when I lived in Webster myself, I took out honeysuckle along a creek, and I put winter creeper in there to stabilize the bank of the creek. So I have used it, but yeah, it is really a vicious thing. And to really get rid of it, it's, you know, it's not easy to do. When I've had it in circumstances in the house in Webster where it came up out of the off the bank and into the yard, I mowed it really short, and then I sprayed it with a Roundup type thing. And it took several applications to finally get rid of it in the area that I tried to get rid of it.
Yeah. Well, I've just made peace with it. As long as it stays where it is. It has wonderful berries for the winter, for
yes.
the creatures in the winter.
Right.
I like that. Although they take the berries and drop them everywhere else.
That's very true. And this stuff is so crazy. It can run on the ground. It can climb tree trunks. It can climb sides of houses and everything else.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, like, you know, I guess it's like the deer that come around at night, as long as, you know, they can eat what they want, as long as, you know, we'll just live with them, I guess.
Exactly. Not too much else you can do.
Thank you.
Thanks, John. Mike Miller, KMWatch Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller, sponsored by Allen's Tree Service on KMOX.
Yes, folks, let's go to Oakville, south of here, and go into Mary's yard. Hi, Mary. How are you today?
I'm fine, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is, last summer, my pin oak tree, my 39-year-old pin oak tree had the gall disease, which is really a challenge. Now that the leaves are off the tree, I look up and I see all of these galls still on the tree.
Right.
I'm thinking about having the tree cut down.
You could
take care of the problem.
I'll get rid of the problem out of your yard. Basically, this is from a sting of a small wasp, not the classic-looking wasp. And that bloating is just, when the eggs hatch, then they burrow into the stem. So if you wanted to eradicate them because you don't want to see them, you know, you'd hate looking at the lumps and everything else. Yeah, cutting the tree down would make it so, you know, they'll be gone. There's no getting around it.
And if I don't cut the tree down, excuse me, I'll have the same problem this next summer?
You'll have the same problem as long as you have this tree and it's alive. Once the tree is impacted by these wasps, they pretty much don't, let's say, they don't move from Oakville to, someplace else, let's say down to Cape Girardeau, or they don't move north to wherever else, you know, they may go. They pretty much stay around the same tree where they were born. So what's probably going to happen is you'll just end up with more and more and more galls. You can go into the woods and look at areas, you know, oak trees that have been, you know, had galls on them for years. And some of the galls are getting huge because a lot of times the females will lay the eggs on, let's say, an old gall, and which just makes no sense. I don't know why they would bother doing that. But, they're never going to go away. Some of them may break off as a result of, like, some squirrel trying to just keep us.
I had a lot break off last summer. Every day they would rain down because we had very busy squirrels eating those galls.
And they use the galls to chew, because if squirrels don't chew, then their lower teeth will, you know, grow up into the roof of their mouth and it'll kill them. So that's why they always hear them going. They're chewing, and that's just to, you know, keep their teeth small.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your advice.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, once you got them, there's no getting around. Now, there is injections and other things that may modify it, but I've not, you know, on larger mature trees, it's going to be a very, very long involved process. And let's say they do kill all the wasps and all the whatevers that, you know, in that particular tree, the galls are still going to stay there for years until they finally come off. So thanks, Mary. And now let's go to Nick. And Nick lives in Sparta, Illinois. Hi, Nick.
Hi, how you doing today? And thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I enjoy your program. I had a little info. The guy was talking about deer coming out there, and chewing on these small trees.
Mm-hmm.
Used to have the same problem about rutting season and that when they would come out and rub up against the stuff. And I used to go to the barber and get hair clippings and put them in nylon socks Yeah, you know, like anklets or something like that.
Sure.
Hang them off a tree, and that kept the deer off of it.
Wow.
And, you know, that's, it seemed to work. I heard that from an old timer. The other thing I wanted to comment on, number one, what do you mean by a knockout rose?
It's a variety of shrub roses. Then the name knockout simply means that the company that developed this type of shrub rose decided to name it knockout.
Okay. All right. That answers that. I hear you talking about it all the time. Next thing, some of the established roses, like the regular bush roses.
Right,
and
hybrid
stuff
teas
like that.
And grandifloras and floribundas, that kind?
Yeah, stuff like that.
Right.
Teacup roses. And that's basically, my mom, and she learned that from her mother. So when you go to trim them, trim it down until you see the first five leaf stem on them.
Right.
And
that's
so,
when you're removing the blooms.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's all I got to say. I really do enjoy your program.
Well, thanks. And thanks for having me on your show, Nick. And tell everybody in Sparta I said hi.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Sure. I'm sure you talked to everybody. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, let's go from Sparta up to Alton and into Patchard. Hi, Pat. Hello, Pat. Are you there? Dr. Howard, Dr. Fine, Dr. Howard? I guess not. Let's go to Roger in Belleville. Hi, Roger.
Hi, Mike. How are you this new year?
Very good.
I want to remove some juniper bushes out of my front area of my yard. They're about 25 years old. Is there an easier way to remove them rather than just pull them out?
Basically, you can cut them down to like a foot or so, and then get some Turdon, which is more or less a wood stump killer, or you can get Roundup for killing woody plants. But that's going to be a fairly involved process. So, yeah, pulling them out is, I don't necessarily recommend that, but the only other way of doing it is cutting, and then leaving enough of a stub that you can actually take, let's say, the Roundup or the Turdon or whatever it happens to be, and paint it right onto the open wound right after you cut it. The plant, the juniper will then suck it down into, the trunk and then out to the root system. But it's probably going to take 1 or 2 years before they're going to be completely dead. Then you're still going to have the stump, so you might have to yank the stump out with, a truck or whatever. Or you can, another way to do it is, I don't know how big these are, if they're Pfitzers and that type, or if they're lower ground cover type, you can go out and dig them up. But that is a lot of work. You're going to have to take a shovel and an axe to be able to get them up out of the ground.
Right. Second question is, what do I do with an area where I've had tomato blight? If I haven't used it for tomatoes for a while, can I replant tomatoes?
If it's probably been at least 2 years with no tomatoes there, and you've cleaned up all the debris, so there's no debris there, left from the tomatoes at all, then after 2 years you should be fine.
And any way to minimize the future tomato blight?
Yeah, I don't know what variety of tomato you're getting, but make sure whatever variety it is has a VFN on the tag right below what variety name is on that tag.
Gotcha. Okay, thanks a lot, Mike.
Yeah, tomato blight is just a disaster. With that VFN, it's not necessarily meaning that you're never going to get the blight, but this is a variety that's been hybridized to make it so you're going to have a less of an opportunity or chance to have the blight. So that's really, really important. But again, 2 years, turn the soil over, and always for anybody, whether you've had tomato blight or not, clean up that tomato debris. Just don't leave it lay there. And don't leave tomatoes on the ground or anything else, anything related to tomatoes. Pick them up and, at the end of the season and get it out of there completely. Thanks, Roger. And now let's go back to Alton in the Patchyard. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I have a 6-year-old Scheffalera plant, and it's gotten tall and ragged looking. And the stems are curvy now, and two of them are over 4 foot tall with thick stems. Can I cut these way down, and should I repot it? And what do you use for fertilizer with this? It was real. It was short and bushy when new, and it, can it be restored?
Restoring, it sounds like you don't have enough light where it's growing. So, in other words, it's got to be in a more or less a southern window that has a lot of light coming in all winter long. And all,
well,
you know, summer.
It is in a southern window, southwest.
So is there trees on the outside of the window?
No.
No, so there's full sunlight coming in?
Yes, pretty
so
much.
So that, you know, that's, you know, a good enough situation. Yes, you can cut it back. I don't know how many stems you have coming, but if you've got, let's say, four stems coming up out of the ground.
I've got lots of those. I've got seven or eight.
Okay, I would say don't cut back all of them at once. And wait until the days start getting longer. So wait until, like, let's say, April or so. Cut them back to about 4 to 6 inches, or 1 foot if you want to cut them back that far. Cut out the ones, the first, you know, let's say first series of pruning it back, the ones that are really the ugliest. And then, you know, get rid of those. Let the new growth start. Fertilize them with just a regular type of houseplant food. And beyond that, that's about all you really need to do. Repotting it, it probably doesn't need it unless you see the root systems coming out of the drainage holes in the bottom of the pot.
Oh, okay. Okay, and then so when I take it out of the pot, if that happens, do I chop those root systems off?
No, you don't necessarily need to do that. You can shake off a lot of the old existing potting mix that's around the root systems, and don't get a pot any bigger than 1 inch, you know, larger than the one it's currently growing in.
Oh, okay.
So don't get a big, massive pot. That's going to cause a plant a lot of grief.
Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, all right. That's a good idea. Is there any fertilizer that you recommend?
Just a houseplant food. I mean, there's Peters, there's Bayer's, there's, you know, Scott's, there's all kinds of different ones.
Okay. Yeah, I had that Schultz stuff. Is that good for Scheffalera?
Yeah, I don't know that particular variety, but yeah, as long as it says it's for, you know, more or less house plants, and in water, you know, fertilize less often, even, and only fertilize during the growing season. So in other words, let's say sometime between March and October, fertilize only then, never from October till March.
Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, okay. Well, that's very helpful. Thank you very much, Mike.
Yeah. And if you missed anything, you can always listen to the podcast, and that will... Mike Miller, KMY's Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, we've got about 9 minutes left for the show. So if you have any questions, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Then at 10 o'clock today, Alex Ferrario is going to be KMOX live from the 2018 Cardinals Care Winter Warm-Up. Greg, you got a question?
Yeah, we had a caller named Ian call in a little bit ago, and he was wondering what would be a good decorative houseplant that needs low light, maybe in a basement or something similar?
Probably if I was going to pick something that can handle really fairly low light, I would look at Sansevieria, Sansevieria, or the common name is mother-in-law's tongue, or snake plant is another common name for it. But it grows like a pointed, straight-up vertical. Doesn't really ever flower for the most part. It does flower, but technically. But that's probably what I would use for that. So let's go now to the caller, and his name is Bob. And Bob happens to live in Troy, Illinois. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing today?
Good.
Hey, I've got a question about watering, especially watering trees and lawns. But first I want to say that we got your month-by-month gardening in Missouri book over Christmas, and we're really enjoying it.
Well, great. Thanks.
It's great. Great chapters about what to do every month in the edibles and the houseplants and trees and roses and perennials, and it's a lot of fun to read.
Right. Well, who do I make the check out to that I'm going to send to you for your advertisement? No, I'm kidding.
Well, one thing that keeps striking me in this book, like you always do on the radio, is you got to water, you got to water, you got to water.
Right.
And then I pull up the annual rainfall in St. Louis over the past 20 years, and sometimes we get like 30 inches of rain, sometimes we get 50 inches of rain.
Right.
And I remember being out in West Texas, and the city parks out there have a little spigot right at the bottom of every tree in the park. And it's starting to make me think that maybe watering is a lot more important than I thought it was. And then I hear the lady that came down from Chicago, and she wanted to grow cherry trees, and she keeps failing at that. And I know I've failed at cherry trees several times. I'm thinking, well, maybe I should water more. And then, so I planted a little patch of Kentucky bluegrass in my yard this past fall, and it came up really nice. It's really bright green right now. And I know Kentucky bluegrass needs a lot of water, but, I wonder if maybe I should do like the West Texas people and put little spigots around my yard and kind of really pour on the water more than I have been in the landscaping beds and the lawns and the trees, and maybe everything would do better.
Well, you know, they do that in that part of the country because it's very arid. So it's really super dry. So they're watering because they can't water, let's say, the whole environment. They're watering very specific locations. I don't think, you know, that's going to be of benefit. And, you know, an average amount of rainfall per year doesn't mean too much. If you remember just what last year was like, we had early spring where everything was flooded. And then as we got into fall, everything was super dry. So it's just, you know, modifying it. So the total rainfall or total amount of water is important, but also it's the timing that's important too. So that's, so watering in just, you know, one little area, let's say spigot-wise, I would say that's, you know, that's probably not worth the effort or anything else. Just water the whole environment is going to be more important. So, you know, it depends upon your water pressure and everything else. But, you know, having a more or less a rain gauge sitting out in your lawn or even just a bowl whenever you do watering or whenever it does rain, so you can see how much rainfall there is. Because let's say a lawn needs about, during the wintertime, an inch of water every 7 to 10 days. During the summertime when it's hot, probably an inch of water every 5 to 7 days, you know, and that's all adjustable. But so I would do more or less that. And if you're going to water trees and stuff, don't water close to the trunk. Water out where virtually the extension of the branches are, all the way out there. And having good quality soil is important because the soil lets the water sink in as opposed to just running off.
Okay. Okay, great. Well, thanks so much for that.
Yeah, and with good soil, it's just like core aeration followed by, let's say a half inch of compost. Let that compost fall down in the core aeration holes. Let's go now to South County and to Donna's yard. Hi, Donna.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I have two questions I hope I can do. I have a Christmas cactus that, first of all, I have one of my cats that loves to attack it, and if you have any suggestions. Secondly, it's very emaciated. It the leaves are real flat. Do I need to fertilize?
Well, the leaves on a Christmas cactus are flat.
Yeah, but this is really sticky.
So if they're weeping over the sides of the pot?
Yeah.
Oh, then you've already overwatered it and it's a goner. The root system's been rotted off.
Oh, gosh.
Sorry.
Oh, that's really sad. Then I don't have to worry about the cat then anymore.
No, let the cat have it.
Well, that's a good idea.
There, go for it.
Also, I was given an orchid for Christmas from a friend, and the flowers fell off of two of the stalks, which I had gone online and found that was okay.
Right.
I went out and got some orchid fertilizer. What I wanted to know is, do I cut those stalks back? The ones that the flowers were originally on?
Yeah, I mean, aesthetically, you know, get rid of them. They don't help the plant at all. You're not, even though there's been people that call and say, I've had rebloom on the old flower stalks.
Okay.
That's not usually going to be the circumstance.
Yeah. I do have new stalks coming up.
Okay.
But I just didn't know if I could get rid of the other stalks.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much for your advice.
Sure. And Marjorie in Columbia, Illinois. Hi, Marjorie.
I have a Siberian husky, and where there was grass, now there is mud. And is there anything we can put down to hold this mud? We can't put sand in there because it'll ruin the floors.
Yeah.
Can't do that.
Also, in the sand and, you know, clay soils together, what kind of soils can bake up in the summertime to be bricks? There's really not too much you can do. Is this an area where the dog's running back and forth?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's also some of it's under a tree, too.
Yeah, so basically putting mulch out is about all you can do. You're never going to be able to get grass to grow there. And ground covers and stuff like that is just can't withstand dogs running back and forth. And underneath the tree close to the trunk, that's because it's solid wood underneath there. Even though it's you think it's soil, you could maybe potentially grow a ground cover like ivy or periwinkle under that, but don't put it up too close to the trunk, you know, with the initial planting.
Okay. Well, the thing of this, where she runs back and forth, it's just, you know, when it rains, it's just mud.
Right.
And, of course, that tracks in and everything. So you think the only thing to do is put mulch down?
Yeah, like three or four or five inches of mulch and just replenish the mulch every time you start to see the mud come up between the pieces of mulch.
Okay. And the mulch should be just wood chips?
Yeah, you could use wood chips because you're not going to, you know, it's not really going to matter all that much. You don't necessarily have to spend a huge amount of money, but just realize that this is, you know, it's just due to the compaction of the dog running back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and back and forth. And that's,
right.
It's so, the soil's so compacted, nothing, if you don't get any weeds growing there, you know that nothing is going to grow there.
Yeah, there's no weeds.
Yeah, no weeds means nothing will grow.
Okay. They have another problem. Have a pond this close by, and there are some snakes. There's snake holes, and there's snakes. What can you do about that?
I would say, you know, get a hold of the county extension service and see. I don't know which kind of snakes they are, but see if there's some kind of control. Snake-wise, I don't really know. I mean, if it's close by, it's not on your property, there's not really too much you can do. Marjorie, got to run. And Jenny from Baldwin, we can't get to your call today, but I will be back, I hope, next Saturday, unless something else goes crazy or Intercom says you're gone. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. I will see you next week.